Good morning. Oh, come on, guys. Good morning. It's only day one, and we haven't had the party yet, so I hope you guys are a little more awake than that. My name is James Conard, and this session is focused on what's new in the Windows Azure platform. Just by way of introduction, I'll give you a little bit of background about myself. I work as part of Microsoft Corporation in sunny Redmond, Washington. It's quite nice to be down here in Vegas, where I've been told you have sun, but I haven't seen it since I got off the airplane. So it's kind of nice to be here in Vegas. I haven't been here for Mix in a couple years. What I do at Redmond is I actually lead the technical evangelism team that's responsible for the Windows Azure platform. I've been doing that for about 3.5 years now. And so it's been an interesting ride to see how the various services and technologies that Microsoft has are starting to emerge in the cloud. And so I lead a team that consists of a lot of folks that are out there and active in the community, doing things like Channel 9 presentations, engaging with other partners and customers, and doing things like building samples and the training kits and that kind of thing. So that's kind of what we do from a developer and platform evangelism side. One of the other aspects of what we do that's not really evangelism-oriented is work very closely with some of the engineering teams and understand what are the features and roadmap for those services that are coming together, especially for the cloud. So it's been an interesting journey over the last 3.5 years, and I'm excited to be here and talk a little bit about what's coming that's new in the Windows Azure platform, as well as take a look at some of the things that have been released just recently. And so with that, what I want to do in this session for the next hour is cover three core things. We'll have just a very brief kind of review of some of the core services and some of the core features of the Windows Azure platform. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that. We're not going to get in a lot of detail about various aspects of storage or the database, that type of thing. But I understand that a lot of people are new to building applications for Windows Azure, and so I just want to give you a quick grounding to some of the core concepts. Secondly, we'll actually look at some of those recent enhancements that have been made available within the last 6 months, as well as some of the enhancements and new features that were discussed earlier today in Scott Guthrie's keynote. And throughout this talk, we'll see various demos of some of those new features and new services. I'll leave you with a bunch of different references to additional sessions where you'll go deeper on some of those services and features, and as well as some other resources for how you go get signed up for the platform and some other content resources you can leverage as well. So that's the structure for this talk. If this talk doesn't sound like it meets your needs or you're looking for something that's a little bit different, I encourage you, take the opportunity now. Go to grab one of the other sessions. There's tons of other sessions that are going on. From an evangelism standpoint, I just want to make sure you get the best use out of your time here at Mix. So I want to cover those right off. So Windows Azure platform. What we're trying to do with Windows Azure platform is make sure that we provide a comprehensive platform as a service offering for building, running, managing applications in the cloud. Scott Guthrie talked about some of the characteristics of the cloud, such as the ability to go focus on your application and not the infrastructure, the ability to have elastic scale, the ability to have a pay-as-you-go model. And those are all principles that we're applying as we build out the platform. There are a few other key things, and this slide really goes back to the beginning of 3 years ago when we started putting together Windows Azure platform. A few other things I wanted to cover here as well. One of them is that we're focusing on making sure we provide an open and flexible platform as well. And by open and flexible, I mean allowing you to go run .NET code. I imagine there's a lot of ASP.NET, C# developers in this room. But I imagine there's also a fair number of folks that are also writing code in PHP or Ruby, Python, and so forth. And so we want to provide an environment for running those types of applications, as well as communicating from services whether the code is running within Windows Azure Compute Environment or outside of Windows Azure Compute Environment. A second core principle we've had is make sure that you can leverage existing investments. What I mean by that is you can go take some existing code, take some familiar skills that you have with different tool sets, like Visual Studio, and apply those to cloud, so you can quickly be productive. And as you see, as Microsoft continue to add new features, new services to the platform, you'll see that we're going to continue to allow you to bring forward existing investments and applications. And then finally, make sure we provide the best platform for the next generation applications. You know, those applications like the social games, where they have to deal with incredible peak, you know, active users at certain points in time, but, you know, a few months after the game is launched, they may not have those resource requirements. applications that are running on the variety of mobile devices that I even see in this room. Right, so providing the best platform that enables those kinds of different applications to be developed. So that's what we're doing with Windows Azure Platform. The core concepts you really need to understand are there's three core services I see almost every developer getting started using. The first one being Windows Azure Compute. And with Windows Azure Compute, the compute environment is the place where you go run your code, whether that be .NET, PHP, Python, or any other code where you provide the runtime environment. Now, we happen to install the .NET framework as part of the operating system images, as part of the platform we provide, but you are free to bring your own runtime as well and execute other code. And that's really important. The other thing that's really important to understand is that we've focused on providing automated service management. What I mean by that is where you don't actually have to start up virtual machines, have to go in, remote into machines and install software, have to go and worry about patches and updates, focus more on the application level and abstract you from a lot of that infrastructure. Now, what we're doing is, if you look at the roadmap, is we're opening it up more and more of that underlying infrastructure to provide towards that goal of allowing you to move some existing applications. But fundamentally, we believe in abstracting you from a lot of those complexities with compute. The second piece is storage. And the storage service that's provided with Windows Azure is really designed to be a highly scalable service that provides storage for a variety of different data formats, whether that be very large blobs from videos and media content and pictures to a NoSQL storage model that we refer to as tables, a queue-based storage model, and that allows for communication across different workloads or what we refer to as roles within our Windows Azure application, and drive storage as well, which provides that, you know, that NTFS-based file system access. And what's important to understand about storage is that we've also exposed this service through a set of REST-based APIs. And so what that means is very easy to go take advantage of storage service, whether you're writing that .NET, PHP, Python code, or even if you're running applications that are in a hosting provider, or those applications are running on-premises environment. You can still consume and start to take advantage of the storage service. The third key service that you really need to understand if you're new to the Windows Azure platform is the SQL Azure Relational Database. And what we're doing with the SQL Azure Relational Database is we're taking all the investments we have with SQL Server today, the same underlying engine, the same programming model, the same way we store and persist data, and we're introducing that in the cloud. I think it was actually about 2 years ago where we first started talking about SQL Azure as providing a relational database. And even before that at Mix, we started talking about some of our data investments in the cloud. This is ongoing where we'll continue to enhance this service as well. So those are the core services you really need to understand from a Windows Azure platform. And what I want to do with that is just jump straight into a demo and show you how some of these services can really be lit up inside of an ASP.NET MVC application. And from this point forward, we'll build on top of that application and introduce some of the additional services and features that you've been hearing about, especially in today's keynote. So let me go ahead and just switch over machines here. Okay. So here I'm on my demo laptop here, and I'll just drop into Visual Studio 2010 here. And I have a very basic ASP.NET MVC application. I was incredibly inspired about the keynote, and so right after the keynote, I rushed across and built a quick MVC application. Okay, not quite true, but it's a very simple application, similar to what you would see from a file new project kind of experience using the new ASP.NET MVC tools, MVC3 tools that Scott Hanselman and Scott Guthrie talked about a little bit earlier. Very simple application. Let me actually just go ahead and run this application so you can see what this application does. Just go ahead and load it up here. It's loading the ASP.NET development server. And this application just brings in some data from a database as well as from Windows Azure storage. So you can see here in my application, I have a list of sessions where I've actually pulling in session data relative to Mix, just a raw list of all the different sessions that are going on. I can pull in some of the speakers, as well as pull in some of the presentations as well. And let me go ahead and click on that. And so this data is actually coming from SQL Azure database, as well as from Windows Azure storage. In fact, if I go ahead and just switch over here to another Internet Explorer instance, what you can see here is the new Windows Azure platform portal experience that we released back in November as part of the wave of November 2010 enhancements. And so if I actually go down to the database section here, you can see under the database section, I have one SQL Azure server. It's kind of a logical container for my databases. It's configured. And I can select that, and you can see I have a MiX-11 database. So I'm able to just connect out to this database that's running in the cloud, even though my application is running on-premises. Likewise, I can do the same thing with storage. So I actually have storage that's configured here. I'll just go ahead and pull up a simple utility that's available in the community. It's called Cloud Explorer. And I can actually browse out to my storage account. And you can see here I have some different presentations, just files that are stored out in the blob storage system. And I'm able to consume those from my application. So let's go take a look at our application here. Go ahead and shut down this Internet Explorer instance. Switch back over here to Visual Studio. And so you see this is just a basic ASP.NET MVC application. Inside of the models, you'll notice that I have an entity definition model for my SQL Azure database. I'll just go ahead and open that up here. And you can see the table structures in my database. So simple sessions, speakers, tags, that type of thing. And so we're able to use the same programming model to connect to SQL Azure as we would from a SQL Server environment today. Let me go ahead and expand controllers here, and you'll see inside of controllers for the sessions as an example. I'm just doing a simple query to pull in all the sessions and then throw it into my view where I can just display it out. Now, let's come back to that Windows Azure storage example. For Windows Azure storage, what I mentioned earlier is we have a REST-based API that I can program against. If you happen to be a .NET developer, we provide a managed client library on top of that REST API as well. And so this storage client library makes it really easy to go do things like connect out to your storage account, create a new Cloud Blob client, and then actually go in reference to a specific container or a container of different blobs, and then just run a simple query against those list of blobs. And so I can pull those into my application. Now, this is a simple read-only kind of example, but as you can imagine, that API, REST-based API, as well as the client API, provides read-write operations as well. And it's actually pretty rich in the functionality of putting in different blocks of the blobs, be able to go and actually take snapshots of the blobs and really interact with that blob storage system, as well as the table storage environment that's provided by Windows Azure Storage. So this is a very simple example and everything running here on-premises in my personal web server. So what I want to do now is actually turn this into a Windows Azure application, an application that would run inside of Windows Azure Compute. So what I'll do is I'll just go ahead and add a new project, and I'll just select Windows Azure Project, and I'll just call this MiX-11 Cloud Services, our cloud service, add that in. I'll get an option here where I can create a new ASP.NET project that I would include. In this case, I'll just hit OK and leave that blank. And you'll notice I get this new project type for those of you that haven't worked with these different tools. I get this new project type as cloud service directly as part of Visual Studio. What I need to do to take my application to the cloud, I need to actually go ahead and associate this role that I have with this cloud service project. So let's right-click here and say Add Web Role and Solution. I'll point to my ASP.NET MVC application, and you'll notice that association has been created. Let me go ahead into Properties here. And for the properties for this role, I can do things like adjust the instance count. So I can specify how many underlying virtual machine images or instances I want to use to run my application. And so I'll just go ahead and adjust this here. I'll adjust it up to 2 and to meet the SLA requirements for Windows Azure. And then I'll also be able to adjust the size for the VMs. One of the things that we introduced back in November as well, within the last 6 months, is the ability to have an extra small size instance. Basically, what an extra small size instance provides is it provides a smaller footprint in terms of memory and CPU usage, but also at a much lower price as well. And when we start talking about some of the different ways you can get started with Windows Azure, you'll see that many of the offers, the free trial offers you can sign up for that don't cost anything to get started, are based on this extra small VM size. So I'll make that adjustment there. And really what I'm doing is I'm just changing some of the configuration that's in this underlying XML configuration file. In fact, I could go over here and just change the operating system family, where one is actually using Windows Server 2008, and I can adjust it to using Server 2008 R2, and just tweak that directly inside of the XML here. So I've created this cloud service project that references to my MiX-11 demo project, and from here I can actually just go ahead and run this in the dev emulator environment. So if I hit F5, with that makes 11 cloud service project being the default, I'll get what we refer to as the dev emulator or the dev fabric. Basically, this is a local environment where I can debug and test my Windows Azure applications before deploying them to the cloud. And so you'll notice here that we've started up our application. I can still access my SQL Azure database that's out there. I can still access my storage information. But what's actually happening behind the scenes is that Windows Azure has started up this compute emulator environment. I'll just go ahead and pull up that UI here. And you can see that there's two instances that are being simulated here on my local machine. And I can get some of the diagnostics information. I can troubleshoot and debug and develop my application without doing a round trip out to the cloud. And so you can see how some of the different tooling works, but also some of the core concepts for those of you that are not familiar with building Windows Azure applications today. So let me go ahead and close this down here, and I'll flip back over to the presentation. So that's kind of what you could go do with the Windows Azure platform, the core concepts. So before I actually talk about some of the new features, what I want to do is talk about kind of where we've come from over the last 3 years. And I'll just build this out quickly, because I'm sure many of you are familiar with our roadmap and how we've been delivering on new features. But I suspect as well, in a room this size, that based on the frequency of Microsoft releasing some of these enhancements, there's probably some key thing that you missed. One of the interesting things about the cloud space for Microsoft is that we've broken away from the classic 2, 3, or 5 year product ship cycle. And instead, we've moved to much more of a services cadence, where you're seeing new SDKs, new services, and even new features for those core services start to be delivered in a matter of a few months rather than a few years. And so we're actively taking feedback along the way from the community, from developers, from the close partners we work with, and enhancing those services. A great example that you see on this is how they took feedback at Mix when we first started talking about the SQL Azure service, and many folks said, we want a relational database model. We took that feedback and announced it the following spring that we're going to go deliver that relational database model. In fact, we did so here at Mix. Took feedback on having a richer model for going to deploying databases. And so we introduced DAC support and 50-gig database support with SQL Azure just last summer. So there's a number of things that we're just continuing to quickly deliver in the cloud, some of which don't even require new SDK features. We're actually able to roll out very quickly by just delivering those enhancements in the cloud through the services. One of the big releases we had was back in November, and we announced this at PDC and then the Professional Developers Conference, and then released a number of these features a month after. Some of the new features for Windows Azure included the new management portal that you just saw, where we can go and configure, manage, and get visibility into all those different services we want to consume and use. The ability to have multiple service administrators. So this is one I find that a lot of people are using Windows Azure are not even familiar with. You can actually, if you're working in a team environment or there's other folks like an operations team that needs to get access to your Windows Azure subscription, you can add in their Live ID as an additional administrator so they can go in and configure and manage those services on your behalf as well. We introduced things like remote desktop, so I can remote desktop into an instance that's running in Windows Azure. Server 2008 R2 support, which you saw me configure in the earlier demo. And some other key enhancements like Windows Azure Connect, where we could establish a connectivity from an application that's running out in the cloud Windows Azure to the servers that you may have on premises or in a hosted environment. And so there's a lot of key things that were just released 6 months ago. I know a lot of you are probably using today, and many of you are also getting familiar with at this point. One of the things I wanted to zoom in on was full IIS. And so what full IIS is, and the name I know can be a little confusing. Full IIS is the full IIS 7.0 or 7.5 web server running inside of a Windows Azure instance. And the reason why that's significant or full is because going back to when we first had Windows Azure, we were only using the hostable web core capabilities of IIS. And so what this means is it really enables new scenarios that were not available before we introduced this feature, like the ability to actually stack or run multiple websites or web applications on top of the same instances. So imagine a couple instances running out in Windows Azure. They're serving up your content, serving up your applications. You actually stack multiple apps on top of that as well. the ability to go fully configure the IIS settings. So for example, configuring some of the different IIS handlers that are available, or fast CGI, and the ability to go turn on things like web deploy to be able to go do a rapid development and deployment, especially in a single instance scenario. And so these are some of the things that we've introduced through the feature referred to as full IIS. One of the other key enhancements in November that I wanted to drill into a little bit more detail is startup task. And by association, we refer to as admin mode or elevated privileges. What startup task allow you to do is customize the Windows Azure environment as Windows Azure is actually starting up those virtual machine images on your behalf. So as Windows Azure is actually starting up those instances, you can run things like PowerShell scripts, you can run batch files, do things like change the underlying operating system settings, be able to go and do installs of components that are provided through MSIs, access registry keys, and so forth. And this really gets interesting because this provides a vehicle by which you don't have to manage and maintain that underlying operating system. You don't have to go apply all the patches, upload virtual machines to the cloud, or take a dependency on somebody else's virtual machine stack that may be coming out of the community. What this allows you to do is take the base images we provide and customize them. And so you'll see this capability being used for a wide variety of scenarios. One example is one of the guys on my team, Wade Wagner, actually used startup task to install Expression Encoder inside of Windows Azure instance, where you could then do encoding within the cloud environment, as just one example. Steve Marks will be giving a talk a little bit later here at Mix. Well, he'll be showing several different examples of how you can use startup task to go do things like install additional runtimes and configure the Windows Azure environment as well. And so what I want to do now is actually just switch back over to my demo machine, and I'll show you a quick example of how you can go use startup task. So you see here my application and that we just created a few minutes ago. And I've created this application, and I've tested it in the local emulator environment, but I haven't yet deployed this out into Windows Azure. And so in order to do that, I need to go ahead and create that package and go up to the Windows Azure portal or directly from Visual Studio and do that deployment. But one of the things that's interesting about Windows Azure right now is that even though this application uses MVC3, I need to make sure that the Windows Azure environment has the MVC3 stack. And it doesn't yet today. Those are fresh new bits. And so I need to actually provide MVC3 as part of my application, no different than any other framework or runtime that you might want to provide as part of the apps that you take a dependency on. And so what I want to do here is I'll just go ahead and add a few additional assets into my project here. I'll go ahead and browse over here to Windows Explorer and grab a few different files I have here on my local machine. And I'll just go ahead and add those in. And some of the files I'm adding, one of them is actually a batch file. And this batch file is going to go out to WebPI via the command line, and it's going to pull in several of the ASP.NET MVC assemblies, using primarily the ASP.NET web pages stack. It's going to do some things here within that environment, like set registry keys, turn on and off Windows Update, and various other tasks as part of the install. And so you can see here as an example the types of things you can do to initialize or bootstrap the Windows Azure instances to customize them as you need to for your application. So I'll just go ahead and include this file here, and I'll just select a copy always for this file. And I'll also do the same for the WebPI command line tools that I include in this project as well. Also going over here into references, and I'll scroll down here. And interesting enough, that WebPI instruction doesn't pull in the MVC DLL. So I'll just specify copy local. So I'll include it as part of the service package I'll deploy out to Windows Azure. And the final thing I need to do before I can get ready to deploy this app out is I need to actually pull in a startup task where I can go ahead and initialize this environment. So here I'm going into the cloud services definition, and I'm just going to add in here an element of startup and a task that starts up that or runs that batch file at the startup of my Windows Azure instances. And so I've configured this package so I can go ahead and package it up and deploy it to the cloud. So let me go ahead and right-click here and say Publish. And inside of Visual Studio, you'll see the option for deploying directly to Windows Azure, or I can create what we refer to as a service package only. I'll hit OK here. And what we'll do is inside of Visual Studio is we'll package up all of our ASP.NET files, our assemblies, our ASPX files, our web.config. We'll package up that startup task and all the other metadata that describes our cloud service application. And that will be built out here to a local directory on my system, where I'll get a service package that contains all those bits, and I'll get this service configuration file as well. From here, if you haven't deployed a Windows Azure application, what you do is go over to Hosted Services inside of the portal experience. I'll go ahead and select that here under the Windows Azure portal. I could create a new hosted service. It's basically the label we provide for ability to go use Windows Azure Compute. I specify the name here for the hosted service. I call this MiX 11 Demo SVC 11, and provide a subdomain here. MiX 11 Demo SVC 11. Pick my data center that I want to run from. I'll select the South Central data center here. Provide a deployment name, and then just go ahead and browse out to the service packages, as well as the config. So let me go ahead and hit OK here. And so what that's actually doing is it's uploading out all those bits I have, and it's actually going to start up my Windows Azure instances for me out in the cloud. Now, as those start up, they're going to execute that startup task that we have, which is going to go ahead and pull through WebPI all of my ASP.NET MVC assemblies and install them within those instances. And so you can see how you could use that pattern for installing a wide variety of different components that you may take a dependency on. So take about 10, 15 minutes for this instance to start up. So what I'll do here is I'll just scroll down here to the deployment I created earlier. And here you can see that same application that's running at MiX 11 demo 1.cloudapp.net. I can just go and browse out to that application. And from here you can see things like some of the sessions, the speakers, as well as the slide deck that we could go drill into. And so in this case, running an ASP.NET MVC application, MVC 3 application inside of Windows Azure. So that's a common use of startup task. Let me talk about some of the other services beyond kind of the core services. One of the new services we introduced last year was the ability to go use the Microsoft CDN. We refer to it as the Windows Azure Content Delivery Network. And what the Content Delivery Network allows you to do is go serve up your content much closer to the end users that will be consuming it. With the use of CDN, you actually tap into the Microsoft's network of today, it's over 24 different nodes, where that content can get placed very closely to some of the end users. As I mentioned, this is actually the same CDN Microsoft uses today for various properties like Microsoft Update, as an example. So for the Windows Azure CDN, it's pretty simple and easy to configure. You can just go into the Windows Azure portal experience and literally check a checkbox to enable the CDN on your storage account. It's integrated directly as part of Windows Azure Blob Storage, but with some of the recent enhancements we made just last month, you can also now do things like turn on HPS support and deliver content that would be coming from your Windows Azure Compute instances. So it's not tied just to storage anymore. As we announced in the keynote today, we're also going to be introducing at the end of this month a CTP for smooth streaming support on top of the CDN. What that means is you'll be able to serve up content for using IIS smooth streaming through some of those 24 different nodes we have distributed worldwide and really get a great experience for your end users with smooth streaming scenarios. And so we'll have a talk later this week at MiX on the CDN specifically, and it will be some demos of IIS smooth streaming via the Windows Azure CDN. So I want to make sure you're aware of that key new enhancement. Another key new service that we actually introduced at PDC last year, and today we announced the commercial availability of, is the Access Control Service V2. And with ACS V2, what it's designed to do is really make it easy for you to go provide authentication support with multiple identity providers. So identity providers from the social space, like Facebook, Yahoo, Google, if you want to support Live ID as well, integrating that as part of your application very easily, as well as supporting Active Directory. So if you're working with customers that have existing Active Directory deployments, they could actually stand up an Active Directory Federation server and actually federate with the ACS service as well. What's really nice about ACS is that it gets you away from the model of programming against these individual identity providers. It allows you to literally turn on anything for Yahoo, Facebook, Google, Live ID, and AD as well from a portal experience. It supports several of the common industry protocols from WS Federation to OAuth 2, and it's a pretty compelling service that you can use as part of your applications, whether it be .NET-based applications running Windows Azure, even applications such as PHP applications, or applications that are running outside of a Windows Azure environment. This is a service that you could easily start taking advantage of today, even if you weren't running applications within Windows Azure Compute. For .NET-based developers, it uses the familiar Windows Identity Foundation programming model. So the same SDK, the same tool set, the same assemblies that we introduced with WIF about 2 or 3 years ago. It also provides a REST-based service management API. So you'll see in a demo in a few minutes, I'll go through the portal experience and actually configure some of the properties for the ACS service. But you can do all the configuration through a REST-based API as well. So you could integrate inside of your own control panels, your own applications, the ability to have ACS support and support for all these different identity providers. In fact, we had Embraco as part of the keynote and talking about some of the things they're doing with Windows Azure. What we also released today is a new set of extensions for ACS that allow ACS to be plugged directly into Embraco. And the really compelling thing about this is that you can manage and configure ACS without going out to the ACS portal, but do so directly from Embraco's control panel, completely abstracting users from the fact that there is a separate service that's being used behind the scenes. So pretty compelling model to take advantage of. This service is now available in a commercial form. We're going to run a no-charge promotion period for the next several months to January 1st of 2012. And after that, it's going to be a really minimal charge. Going back to the pricing model we have for ACS today, which is $2 for every 100,000 transactions. So just a really minimal charge for consuming that service. And so that's what ACS 2 is about. What I wanted to do is switch back over here to my demo machine and show you how we could use ACS. So I'll just go ahead and close this, close a few windows here, and close a browser here. And reset a few of these environments here. Clean up my VS environment here, close those individually. So I'm back here in my ASP.NET MVC application, and what I want to do is pull in that new access control service. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'll go back out to the Windows Azure portal, and I'll go ahead and log in here. And you may have noticed inside the portal, on the left-hand side is a section for service bus, access control, and caching. So I'll go ahead and select that option, and in there you can see the access control service. So this is the production ACS V2 service. You'll notice as part of this that I have a couple different namespaces I configured. Namespaces essentially provide the ability for you to go and capture settings such as what's the subdomain I'm going to use for accessing the service, and various other parameters, like with the caching service you'll see in a little bit. The namespace provides the ability for me to specify the size of my cache. One of the things I can also do is specify the data center in which I want to use the ACS service. So in this case, I've created a couple namespaces here, and one of which is this Mix 11 event demo. I'll select the access control service option. It'll take me over to this portal experience where I can go and configure the ACS service. And so there's several options you see on the left-hand side, such as the ability to go and add or remove the different identity providers I want to use. So things like, identity providers like Facebook, Yahoo, Google. In the case here, you see I'm using Yahoo and Live ID. What I want to do here is go over to application integration. And on application integration, I'm just going to go ahead and copy the path here for the Federation metadata. This is going to describe all the settings that are currently in ACS that I can then pull into my application. And I'm going to do a round trip here with my application. I'll go into the ASP.NET MVC application. I'll right-click and say Add STS Reference. And so this Add STS Reference dialog is something that's provided with the Windows Identity Foundation SDK, an SDK we've been shipping for a little over 2 years now. And so it plugs directly inside of Visual Studio, and I can just go ahead and type in the path for my application. In this case, I'm running my application on the personal web server here, and so I happen to have noted here that I'm running on port 15749, so I'll type that in here, and hit yes. I'll select an option to use a secure token service that's provided by the access control service. I'll hit next. And I'll just go through the dialog and I'll just take some of the default settings in this case. Obviously, not something you want to do for production purposes, but I'm running this here locally for demo purposes in my personal web server. So it's pulled in some of that metadata, and it's also captured some of the additional settings that I specified in the dialog. So I'll take the path to the metadata here that is generated by that STS reference wizard, and I'll go back into the portal, and I'll say I want to add a Reliant Party application. A Reliant Party application is like the website that takes a dependency on the ACS service, where the Reliant Party app is actually going to take a dependency and use ACS to plug into some of those different identity providers that you saw a little bit earlier. So we'll call this Mix 11 demo. And instead of specifying all these settings here for this Reliant Party app, I'll just go ahead and browse to that file that we created a few minutes ago. So I'll pull that in. I'll scroll down here to hit save. Okay. And so I've added that in. And the next thing I need to do before I run this in the application to use a service is I need to go in and configure this default rule group. So by virtue of creating that Reliant Party app, I have this group that allows me to specify some of the different rules. And these rules really define how I can take some of the claims or some of the information coming from those identity providers, like Yahoo, like Google, like Facebook, and I can map those to different claims or identifiers that I care about for my application. Just for this example here, what I'm going to do is use this option here for generate. And what generate's going to do is it's going to generate a default set of rules here for my application. So I'll select generate here. It's going to ask me which identity providers I want to generate the rules for. I'll just use the ones I have configured. And you'll notice that it's added in some default rules here that are just pass-through. Pass-through of email address, name, and other information from Yahoo and Live ID. And I'll go ahead and save that information here. So I've added in the Reliant Party app and the rule group, and I've configured ACS at this point. Go back over to my MVC application here. And what I'll do here on my Makes 11 demo project is I'm just going to run this in a local environment. So I'll just do debug start instance. And so you'll notice I'm browsing out to my local web server. And in this case, instead of going directly into my application, I was redirected out to ACS, where because ACS is configured to use Live ID and Yahoo, I'm now presented with those options for authenticating to my application. I'll select Yahoo here. And so you'll notice then we'll be redirected back into my ASP.NET MVC application. What you'll also notice up here on the left-hand side is that in this case, we've actually been passed through one of the claims coming from Yahoo, being my account name. So here you can see I'm actually logged in directly as James Conard as part of my application. So a very simple example, but hopefully that demonstrates how quickly and easily you can go get started with the access control service and start integrating with your application, where you're not programming directly against some of these services, but instead able to program against ACS and configure which identity providers you want to leverage. So with that, I'll flip back over to the presentation here. Let's talk about one of the other services that we talked about today, which is caching. So the caching service is really designed to provide this distributed in-memory cache for Windows Azure applications. There are two primary use cases for having an in-memory cache. One is, I just really want to improve the performance of my overall application. And to do that, we provide an API you can go right against. You can stuff data in the cache, or you can read data out of the cache. You can specify various time intervals for when you expire the cache, that sort of thing. It is a .NET-based client library today. What we also provide is a session state provider. So if you're building web applications that use session state, this is a great scenario where you could just configure an ASP.NET session state provider to start using the AppFabric caching service. We really look at caching as one of those things where we had a choice to make about a year and a half ago. Do we actually go and just provide the ability to go run something like our existing caching technology, or Windows Server AppFabric cache, and provide you the ability to go run that inside of your virtual machine images, where you would configure and manage and be responsible for those underlying images? Or do we have the opportunity to up-level a little bit? Do we have the opportunity to go kind of raise the level of abstraction? And that's the path we chose. And so what we decided to do with caching is introduce it as a service. You literally go turn on the caching service, you specify the size of the cache that you want to leverage, and then you write code against that service. And it's really important to understand that distinction, because that's how we think about delivering many, many services from Microsoft. Instead of giving you the software, the keys, and the responsibility to go manage that, instead, why don't we provide you a turnkey service that you can leverage? It does leverage some familiar and consistent APIs, so it is using the same APIs for the Windows Server App Fabric that's available today as well. And so that's a consistent experience. The caching service will be available in commercial form by the end of this month, and you can start using the CTP today if you go out to portal.appfabriclabs.com, and there's no charge for using the CTP today. So what I want to do here is actually show you how we could leverage the caching service. So I'll flip over to my demo machine here. And let me just go ahead and close a couple windows here. And I'll actually just close this instance of VS as well. And I'm going to navigate over to portal.appfabriclabs.com, where I can get access to the caching service CTP. And in this case, what you can see here is that this is a subset of the portal experience specifically for the CTP. Some of the services that recently came out of CTP and went to a commercial form, like ACS, are still represented here as well. And what I want to do is select the caching service. And similar to what you saw earlier with the access control service, I have the ability to go and create a new namespace. And when I do so, for caching, not only do I have the ability to select the data center, but I have the ability to select the cache size as well. For this CTP, we're only running the CTP in our South Central data center. By the time we hit commercial availability at the end of the month, caching service will be in every data center where Windows Azure is available. You also only see two options for cache today, 128 meg and 256. By the time we hit commercial availability, we'll have options that range from 128 meg up to 4 gig as well. And so we'll provide pricing details and all that good stuff at the end of the month when we hit commercial availability. So I can quickly configure a namespace here. In this case, I'll just go ahead and hit cancel here. And you'll notice that I've already configured this namespace a little bit earlier before this demo. Now, so how would I actually start writing some code and programming against this? Well, one of the easiest paths is actually get some of the configuration information that I could drop into my web.config file. And so we provide this option here for view client configuration. And what this does is it gives me back a field here with all of the different configuration settings that I can drop into my app. So let me just go ahead and just dump that in Notepad here. And I'll increase this font size for everybody that's in the back of the room. And I'll just point out a couple of key things here. First of all, we provide the config section that you drop in your web.config, which defines the additional configuration sections for the file as well. The other key part is the actual data cache client, where you'll notice in this case, we're just specifying what's the namespace that we've configured for our caching service and the default port to use. And the final key piece of information you see here is the auth token for accessing that cache service. If you want to use caching with session state, there's also some sections here we could just go drop in to our web.config. And so for the sake of time here, what I'm going to do is just close this down, close down the portal window there, and I will flip over here to another project here I have. It's a caching demo. I'll just go to open up this in VS. This is the same project we've been creating. I've just already integrated some of the caching service directly as part of the project for the sake of time. And so here we see our ASP.NET MVC project again. And in this case, in references, I've added a couple references to the caching assemblies that I need to program against the caching service for a .NET-based application. I've also added into my web.config my section from a data cache client, as well as the information down below, which specifies my namespace, port, and my auth token for accessing the caching service. And I've added some code into my controller. So if I go over here to sessions and I scroll down, there's a few key pieces of code here I want to point out. Here you can see we're starting to program against this data cache factory, which basically gives us a handle to go and access the caching service. I'll create an instance of this factory in my action here if I don't have one that already exists. And then I'll just go ahead and get the default cache. I'll check the cache to see if I already have some of the sessions in the cache. And if so, I'll just cast those into an IEnumerable and pass those on to the view. If not, then I'll go ahead and do the query, and I'll just stuff that session data directly into cache. And so a very simple programming model here, a simple example for how I can do an initial query and drop that data into cache. Now, of course, in a more advanced app, I would probably want to add, you know, timeouts. I would probably want to expire the cache over a certain amount of time. I probably wouldn't want to cache all of the session data. But you can see here how you can tap into that programming model and quickly get started with the caching service. You'll also notice that I'm using a stopwatch here to track the time from when I go and do the initial read to cache and when I get my data. And so that time interval of milliseconds is just passed on to the view as well. Let me go ahead and just right-click here, and I'll say debug and start a new instance. And I'll just run this here locally. So let's run this here on my personal web server. It's running on my local laptop here on stage. And you know, of course, I configured ACS earlier, so I got the ability to log in with Yahoo. I'll go over to the sessions. It's just pulling in some of that session data out of the database. And you know, first query here, taking a little while. Now, if I scroll down here, you'll see the amount of time. So almost 5 seconds for that initial query, and the first query was hitting the database. So I'll just do a quick refresh here, and you'll notice on this second query, I was hitting cache. And even though I'm running just on my local laptop, and I'm accessing memory that's in some Windows Azure instances by the caching service that's in our South Central database, it still significantly improves the performance and response time for my application by avoiding hitting the database. And so, of course, you wouldn't want to do this in a production setting of, you know, accessing memory in another data center because it kind of defeats the purpose with the network latency. But you can see here how I can just quickly test and use that caching service, whether my code would be running inside of Windows Azure or in development purposes, even locally on your laptop. So all I'll do is just go ahead and close this window here and navigate back out to the Windows Azure portal. See if I still have a... Nope. Navigate back out here to the Windows Azure portal. And one of the hosted services I've configured is I've actually deployed this full application with ACS and with caching out into Windows Azure as well. And if I select hosted services here, I can scroll down, and you'll see here I have a few hosted services. There we go. So I have this Mix 11 Demo 2, and Mix 11 Demo 2 is that same application that you saw just a few minutes ago. It's just been configured to go run inside of Windows Azure, and I'm actually running inside of the South Central database as well. So I have the ability to go put my cache and my compute close together. My database is also running in that same data center. So let me go ahead and just select this deployment, and I'll just browse out to that site. So Mix 11 Demo 2. I'll get prompted to log in with Yahoo here, and then I'll just get straight into my application. You'll notice in this case I can go into my sessions. My first query here came in about 1.3 seconds, and that was actually in cache, and it's warming up the cache now, and I'm getting down under 47 milliseconds. So just a quick example of how you can go start using that service, both running locally as well as in the cloud with Windows Azure and the Windows Azure caching service. Let me go ahead and flip back over here to presentation. In addition to access control, in addition to caching, there are a number of other services that we're starting to provide as these kind of building block services you configure and start consuming as part of your application, especially on the data side. One of them we announced at PDC was SQL Azure Reporting. And so if you're using reporting today, or if you use SQL Server Reporting Services, what's available as a product today, what we're doing is delivering that as a service moving forward. And so you can go configure SQL Azure Reporting, start using the same programming model, the same SOAP-based web services, the same tool set to create and upload and start running reports out in the cloud. And those reports can be embedded and integrated as part of your applications as well. This service is currently in a private CTP. We're making a lot of progress and hope to make some announcements soon about general availability for this service. In addition to that, we also have the SQL Azure DataSync service. And the DataSync service is designed to go and synchronize data from your local SQL Server environment to the cloud, to SQL Azure, or in the cases where you might want to synchronize data across databases, potentially data across multiple data centers as one example. And so this is, again, it will be delivered as a turnkey service that you can configure and start using for your applications. And the final kind of data service I wanted to mention here was Windows Azure Data Market. We went commercially available with the Data Market within the last 6 months, actually during the Professional Developers Conference. And what Data Market's really designed to do is provide this marketplace environment where you can go find and start consuming a wide variety of different data sets. So think about data sets like sports data. Think about UPC data for various products. Or you have a data set that you think about as reference data, be able to go find that in the Data Market. We're working with a lot of different data providers in the industry to get some of those commercial data sets, as well as working with some of the state, local, and country-level governments to go get some of that public sector data that's exposed through Data Market as well. And so we're continuing to light up more and more data sets inside of Data Market. For those, some of you that have been following along Microsoft's kind of cloud services journey, we first announced this service with the code name of Dallas and just released it within the last 6 months. So those are some of the other services I want to call your attention to. What we're seeing over and over again is that it's not just about the scalability of these applications, though. It's about how these applications can really deliver a very responsive experience for users. Whether those users are using laptops like I have up here or, you know, the latest device in their hand, the ability to go put not only content, like in the scenarios we talk about with the CDN, but also the ability to go serve up those applications as close as possible to those end users is becoming more and more important. And so you start thinking about just the challenges of, you know, running applications inside of a particular data center and having users that are, they're distributed throughout the world. Of course, the further out you go from that data center, the more tax you pay in terms of latency for accessing those applications. I talked about the mobile scenario. That's a classic example where inside the United States, someone could get on a plane and one day, get on a plane in London and actually travel over to the U.S. 9 hours later, and if those applications are consuming data and accessing services back over to Europe, they're going to pay a huge latency on the performance of those applications. It's going to be more and more important all the time. And so one of the things that we're introducing is the new Windows Azure Traffic Manager to help address some of these scenarios. What Windows Azure Traffic Manager is designed to do, it's designed to go allow you to support load balancing across multiple hosted services that we'd have running inside of Windows Azure. This is a new capability we're introducing today that's now available in CTP. You should see it in the Windows Azure portal where you can go sign up for the various beta programs and get added to that CTP. And you'll also start to see this light up within the Windows Azure portal experience as well. For this CTP, we focused on three core scenarios. The first one is just the obvious scenario of performance. Performance-based load balancing across data center based on the origination of the incoming request. The second scenario, though, is really important as well, especially if you start thinking about highly available applications, which is providing better support for fault tolerance. So in the scenarios where, you know, maybe there's an issue with your application, or who knows, maybe there's a problem with the data center, having the ability to fail over an application to another instance that's running in another data center and provide that next level of availability. And it's a great example of those kinds of solutions that are going to be really unique to delivering them in the cloud. The final scenario we're enabling is just round robin. And so we can reconfigure a ratio and just distribute the request based on that ratio. And so you imagine configuring, for example, you know, 20% type of workload goes to one data center and the remaining 80% goes to another. These are the three initial scenarios that we're just now introducing, but you can start thinking about a lot of additional scenarios. We can start building on top of having a software-based load balancer that's distributed across multiple data centers. And so what I want to do now in the remaining minutes for this talk is actually show you just a quick example of Windows Azure Traffic Manager. I'll switch over to my demo machine here. And inside of the Windows Azure portal experience, I'm actually signed up for the Windows Azure Traffic Manager CTP. So I'll go down here to Virtual Network. And you'll notice inside of Virtual Network, I have the new Traffic Manager node in the tree. If I select Traffic Manager here, I can specify some of the different policies that I can configure, create in this environment. So I can go ahead and create a new policy. And when I do so, I pick my subscription for the Windows Azure platform. And you'll see those three different options that I just talked about a few minutes ago. Those three different scenarios being lit up for performance, failover, as well as for round robin. And so, for example, I could select performance. And in the list below, I see all of the different hosted services and the data centers in which those hosted services are running. So I could take an application that's running in one of the data centers, like in East Asia, grab that application from West Europe as well, and from South Central, and add all those in to be managed by Traffic Manager. You'll also notice the relative path and file name. What this allows you to do is tell Traffic Manager, here's the path in my application. I want you to ping to know the health status for my application. So Traffic Manager can keep a status of all of your apps and understand whether or not it should actually redirect incoming traffic to those applications. And then finally, down below, you see the DNS prefix, where I could go ahead and enter in what I want my DNS prefix to be that I would then map my domain to using DNS. And so this is how I could just go map in incoming traffic into Traffic Manager and have it distributed across multiple data centers. So let me go ahead and go back to the window here. And you'll see here I've configured in Traffic Manager with three different applications. They're running three different data centers. And really the difference between these apps is I just have a slight configuration difference. I've changed some of the background color information. I changed some of the other settings for that as applications as well. You'll see that this application is configured with the DNS name through Traffic Manager at performance.worldapp1 and cdptrafficmanager.com. And so what I'll do here is I'll just go ahead and type in that URL and paste that in. So in this case, I'm actually hitting my application. And you'll notice in this case, my application was served up from the US South Central data center. And so Traffic Manager right now is configured for, in this case, to do round robin. And so it did round robin hit US South Central. Now, this little app that we created, we also provided the ability to just even turn off that application. So basically, if I hit disable here, I would tell that application to emit back a health status that indicates it's failed. So Traffic Manager would take it out of the rotation. In this case, I'll just go ahead and hit refresh here. And as I hit refresh, you'll notice I get a slightly different background color in this case. And the next request, I hit the West Europe data center. So even though I'm coming in through that same URL, I'm actually being routed by Traffic Manager to different data centers depending on how I've configured Traffic Manager from the portal experience. And so it's pretty interesting capability as you start thinking about delivering these highly scalable, highly available applications in the cloud, where especially in the device kind of scenarios, you can really think about delivering some light up experiences as well. So I just want to show you that quick demo of the new capabilities that we're introducing there. Flip back over to the PowerPoint here. So, covered some of the new features, some of the new services, as well as for those of you that haven't had a chance to play some of the November enhancements, some of the key ones you should look at. Before we wrap up here, I want to provide some of the information for where we're at with some of the different offers that you can use to get started with the Windows Azure platform. So today, there's really two different free trial offers that are available. One that provides a 30-day access to the platform, we refer to as Windows Azure Pass. And you can see some of the different resources that are provided there. Three small instances, around 3 gigs of storage. So pretty light kind of getting started trial mode, but enough to go get started building applications in the cloud and understanding some of those core services that I mentioned earlier. We have a code here on the screen, and you'll be seeing this code throughout some of the MIX sessions. It's MIX ABC. If you just go to windowsazurepass.com, you can enter that passcode and get access to 30 days of access to the platform. The other offer that we've actually enhanced as of today is what we refer to as introductory trial. And as of today, we announced we're extending this to September 30th, 2011. The intro trial offer includes extra small compute time, enough extra small compute time to go run an instance for a month. It also includes 25 small hours as well, so if you want to play around with a different instance size. We've increased this intro trial offer as well on the storage side, going up to 20 gigs of storage and also adjusting data transfer numbers for in and out bandwidth as well. And to sign up for this, just go to windowsazure.com and sign up for the trial. Now, as part of signing up for this trial, you'll be asked to provide credit card information. You'll be asked to go and create an official kind of subscription, but that allows you to also go and tap into some of the additional services or convert over to running a production class application with some of those services. We're also announcing today that we're enhancing some of the MSDN benefits for Ultimate and Premium subscribers. So if you happen to be an MSDN subscriber in this room, your benefits for Ultimate and Premium just got increased, or 1,500 hours for small instances, 1,500 extra small for Premium, and we're also introducing now support for Professional. So if you're an MSDN Professional subscriber, you can now get access to the Windows Azure platform as well for free. And these resources are provided month over month as well. Some of the other resources I want to point you to is that we actually have a new Windows Azure Platform Training Kit. This is a vehicle that my evangelism team uses to push out a lot of different resources in terms of hands-on labs, some presentations, a bunch of demos. It's a single download where you can get all those different resources. We've added in a new hands-on lab for Traffic Manager as part of that. So it's around a 40-page kind of walkthrough of how you can go and configure Traffic Manager for the scenario I just showed you and go through the different portal experience there. We also have updated all the access control service hands-on labs to use the new service that's available. And we've updated some of the other ones as well to reflect some of the changes that went out last month. So for the Windows Azure Connect service and for the CDN service. We also announced in the keynote the new accelerator from Embraco, and this is available on CodePlex as of today. And it's kind of interesting because you can use it for running Embraco-based applications, but there's also some patterns that have been identified in there. You can go apply to a wide variety of other web workloads as well. And then there's a number of different extensions that we're releasing, including the new ACS one for Embraco that I mentioned a few minutes ago. So this is the first session on Windows Azure Platform Mix. Want to provide you a lot of resources and pointers to some of the other sessions. So we have several that are queued up from different folks on the engineering teams and the evangelism team, including Steve Marks is going to give a session on building some applications using Node.js, Ruby, Python. There's a session that Wade will be giving on building Windows Phone 7 applications that connect out to the Windows Azure platform. There's a session that's going to be on kind of getting started with storage and using the CDN, as well as the new smooth streaming capability. So lots of exciting sessions from the different folks on the engineering and evangelism teams. The final thing I want to note here is around there's some other sessions we've introduced from some of our partners and some of our customers as well. And so at this point, we think it's important that you hear what other people are doing with the cloud. And so there'll be a session from Nip from My Web Career. He'll be talking about how you go from creating your first application and being a startup to really scaling that application up based on demand. Simon Guest from Nudesic will also be giving a talk on how to build iPhone and iPad applications that connect out to Windows Azure Platform, another common scenario that's coming up more and more. And then we've lined up several different, we'll refer to as mini sessions, in 25-minute sessions, where some of the different partners in the ecosystem can talk about what they're doing, ranging from the Embraco folks to .NET Nuke, as well as Three Melons, who's building a social game that's running on Windows Azure as well. So I think it'll be exciting to find out about some of the scenarios, some of the patterns, and some of the lessons learned from these various folks. So with that, we're right about time, and I'm standing between you and lunch. I'm happy to take a few questions here. What we could do is we've got about 3 minutes left here. And so what I'll do is go ahead and dismiss you. And if you guys want to just come up to the podium, I'll answer some questions. I'll also be at the Ask the Experts later today, as well as several other folks from the engineering and evangelism team will be there later today as well. And so happy to field questions now, and I'll let the rest of you go out to lunch. So with that, thanks a lot for your time.